What's up, fools? This is the QTR Podcast. Today's March 17th, 2020. It's St. Patty's Day. Hey, shit day to live in Boston, huh? Fucking Tom Brady's leaving and all the bars are closed. Merry Christmas to you guys up there. Geez, it's going to be a tough one. For me, it's an easy one. I'm doing what I always do, which is sitting at home and just having a drink by my lonesome. It feels great. I don't have to listen to anybody's bullshit. And all the alcohol's readily available. I don't have to wait for a bartender. I gotta tell you, this lockdown is doing wonders. This is the QTR Podcast. I probably said that already. Today's podcast, like all of my podcasts, is brought to you by my patrons. Who are my patrons? Patrons are people that sign up and donate a monthly recurring sum to help support the podcast. As of right now, until Friday of this week, I am matching 50% of all new patrons and am donating that for the Center to Philanthropic Disasters. They have a COVID-19 response fund. So thank you so much to everybody that signed up of recent. And that goes until Friday that I'm going to match that. So I want to shout out some of my patrons. I'm going to give you a couple rules for the podcast, and we're going to get on with the damn show today. First and foremost, this podcast is brought to you by my friends over at the Sanlucci Steam Room. The Sanlucci Steam Room, Sanlucci, Charlie Bathgate, Wall Street Jesus, these guys are OGs on the street. Started about a decade ago. What do they specialize in? They specialize in tracking money coming into the options market, putting that in a little something they call the Steam Room, which is an online real-time room that shows you where the money is going, because a lot of times that can dictate where the equity markets are going to go. That means a lot of times when money comes into options, it'll tell you where the stock might be headed in the future. Because I hate to say it, the world is a shitty place, and sometimes people in the options market know things that they shouldn't. Too many coincidences if you watch the options market closely. Sanlucci does a great job of pointing those out so that if you're a day trader or just an investor, you can be mindful of those things. Lucci will be back on the show soon also. And in addition, he offers the 3LT playbook and his masterclass, two great educational resources if you're a day trader. All those links are in my podcast description. Sanlucci is one of my best friends in the industry and a hell of a good guy, so please check him out. This podcast also brought to you by my friends over at thetraderspath.com. The Trader's Path is a new investing service, another great tool if you're a day trader. And right now with the markets going crazy, it's wonderful to have a community of traders around you. My buddy Pete Hedgetis over at the Trader's Path started the Trader's Path because he got tired of the nonsense and bullshit of other trading services. Not going to mention any names, but you know who I'm talking about. The guys that take your money, have you sign up, then front run your trades and don't give a fuck about you. Pete said, I want to do something a little bit different. His service offers daily live streams. So you're going to be able to see everything that they're doing in real time as the trading day progresses. Investor education, watch lists at the beginning of the day that are going to help you prepare for your day ahead. So you'll be getting new ideas. You'll be able to share things with people, which is just great. The more ideas and the more open-mindedness and the more information flow, the better. There's no better place to do it over at the Trader's Path. They trade red markets, they trade green markets, options, equities, and Pete doesn't waste your time with a lot of nonsense and bullshit. They don't trade low float crap and things like that. This podcast also brought to you by my friends at Rumorhound. Rumorhound is another fantastic tool for your arsenal of day trading tools. What is it? Rumorhound is a platform that is going to A, make you aware of All right, let's all just take a 5-minute breather here. I'm getting a little out of line. Hang on. All right. Rumorhound is a platform that's going to point out to you merger and acquisition rumors in the investing space. Again, another thing that if you know in advance, they could be great. It could be lucrative information, right? And what merger, what Rumorhound is going to do, I swear I'm going to pull it together here, folks. What Rumorhound is going to do is it is going to tell you, first off, it takes these M&A rumors, plugs them into their proprietary artificial intelligence-based algorithm. So it's looking at multiple proprietary variables. Nobody else is doing anything like what Rumorhound is doing right now, right? Then it's going to spit out to you an easy-to-read suggestion as to whether or not a rumor that you see about a merger and acquisition is worth paying attention to. Maybe whether it's financially viable, maybe whether or not there's a chance of it actually happening or not. And with that information, if you're a trader, you understand that can be very valuable. It's a beautiful interface. It's a wonderful platform. And they're big supporters of the podcast. So if you haven't, check them out. Their link is also in the podcast description. And you can get free information by following them on Twitter, at Rumorhound. You can also follow Sanlucci and my buddy Pete Hedgetis on Twitter as well. This podcast also brought to you by my friends at Corvus Gold, my longtime supporter Monero, shipping analyst Jay Mintzmyer. He is doing a Q&A coming up that is free. So if you check out Jay Mintzmyer on Seeking Alpha and you have questions about the tanker and shipping industry, he's the guy to go to. Russ Valenti, my good buddy, Nicholas Parks, Nathan Michaud, Chris Bede, Ken R., Chris Boas, Crichton Titus, and some of my newest patrons, the people that have contributed and are helping donate to this COVID-19 relief fund. I swear I'm going to get it together today, folks. I swear. I'm sorry. I just get nervous around people. People that have helped support the COVID-19 relief fund that I'm going to be donating to on Friday. I'll be matching again 50% of new patrons. Vaclav Kosar, thank you so much. Kemenlin Swain, thank you. Tom Rima, Jeffrey Higgins, Mecca Troner is in the house. Alejandro Janlevich? Jankalevich? Alejandro, thanks, brother. Kent Thomas Cravey, what's up, my brother? Michael Flowers, James Malloy, my homeboy Simon, my friend Taylor Kenny, Namita, David Fiorino, what's going on? John Bjork, thank you. Drew Cuthbert, Michael Lynn, Nicholas Witt, Mark and Travis Rupert, my friends over at 10 Strike Racing. Fuck yeah. John Sebastian, Roberto Moreno, Chris Ariel, Andrew Washko, Chief Shorting Bull, thank you guys so much. Speedwagon Capital, Chris, Jeff Manick, Randy Mitchell Stogger, Matthew Kelly, Dan Fry, Colin Turner, and the whole fucking group. All right, before we get started, two other things. Two drink minimum for this podcast, and this is not investment advice. It's not life advice. I'm not registered. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not an investment advisor. Do your research elsewhere. Man, that was a mouthful. All right, on the line with me today, very special guest, actually. Honored to have this gentleman on with me today. And really interesting how we came to meet one another, at least online. I have Nick the Carney Lentz online. Nick is a UFC veteran, man. He's been around for a while. And truly, I think he's going to go down in history as one of the people that was there for the sport at what I think will be the most important time, arguably, in the sport's history. You know, I haven't been into mixed martial arts for a very long time. It's only been a couple of years. But knowing what I know about Nick and reading what I've read about him and talking to other people that I respect and what they think about him, I think he's going to go down with legendary status. What a lot of people might not know about Nick also, too, and actually how I first came across him, is Nick is also quite active in the market. We follow each other on Twitter, and we've been bantering back and forth for like 6 months to a year, which is actually how I first stumbled across Nick Lentz. What's going on, brother? How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm hoping that this spy dies because I got puts in it. So I'm just watching it and hoping it dies right now.
It's getting smacked here while we're speaking, actually. We probably should have done this after market hours, huh?
No, it's all good. It's all good. I had a good day yesterday, so I'm only playing with house money.
Did you? Good, good. And if you feel the need to just, you know, take 10 seconds and just go and execute a trade, you know I'm cool with that, man. So listen, first and foremost, man, I just wanted to talk a little bit about your career. I saw actually today that you train out of American Top Team in Florida. Is that right?
I used to train at American Top Team. Now I train with Henry Hoof and Hard Knocks 365. So I was ATT for a long time, and then we sort of had a falling out of ways, and then they ended up kind of coming after me, sending a guy to fight me. And then I ended up submitting him. And then on the mic, I challenged the owner that he couldn't find anyone to beat me at his team. And I would give him $50,000 if he could. Oh, and I haven't heard back from him since. So
how long ago was that?
That was like 2 years ago, I think. So in general, I'm not at ATT anymore. I train with Henry Hooft, Hard Knocks 365. It's one of the best gyms in the world, one of up and comer ones. And, in general, like I joke about ATT, but that I love all those guys over there too. It's just sometimes in the professional world, you have to make changes, you know, and we both felt that it was a good idea to make the change. And so now I've been with Henry, and it's been a good time.
Yeah. Well, you know, it sounds like you sound like you're handling it with class, and you're not you know, that's how things go in the professional world. There's a guy at our gym, Sydney Outlaw, that's training down there, which is actually why I wanted to bring it up, because I was wondering if you were still down there, if you knew him or not. But
no, I don't know him, but you know, ATT is a great place, so I'm sure he's learning a lot.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I was actually I watched an interview that you did after, I think it was UFC 224 a couple nights ago, where I gotta hand it to you. Here's what I'll tell you, man. When I started to follow some of your tweets, because I think you followed me first before I followed you, but I've been following you for a little while on Twitter, and you know, oftentimes you respond to a lot of things that I put up, and you know, so I was watching this interview that you did. I think it was after 224, where you're talking about kind of being the complete package. You're talking about the difference between, you know, just being a guy that goes out there and beats the shit out of people versus, you know, being a complete fighter and being a guy that's, you know, that has it on the microphone and a guy that's just, you know, the complete package, right? And the way that I interpret a lot of your tweets about the market is that you are more than a P&L guy, it comes off as. It comes off like you have your finger on the pulse of things. How long have you been in the market?
Well, I've been in for a while, and like I started as like a macro investor type, you know, like I was kind of brainwashed. Well, first I started in 2008 was the first time, was when I got into the UFC, that 2008, 2009. And that was when everyone's lives were just blowing up, you know? So I vowed from that point, like I never had any credit cards. I thought the market was a completely rigged thing. I thought it was the worst thing ever. I didn't trust any of it. And then as I got older, I started seeing like, holy shit, like I'm missing like a huge part of my life because I'm not involved in this. So one of the things that I am is I'm very obsessive about the things I want to do. So I put up like a training schedule for learning about the stock market. And I said, for 1 year from now, I want to know everything I can about the stock market. And for 8 hours a day, every day, no breaks, I would study to make sure I knew, understood, you know, and then when you start with that, you know, you kind of brainwash into that index fund thing. And then you go from indexing to like the Warren Buffett type value investing. And so I was doing that for a while and I was doing okay. You know, like I started with like 10 grand and I turned 10 into 20 and I thought I was like hitting it out of the park, you know?
Right.
And then, yeah, I thought I was hot shit for a second. And then I started realizing that I was putting so much work and study into these companies, and I was like following the balance sheets and I was looking at the earnings and I was doing all this. And the more I studied, the more I saw that the market didn't give a shit about, it didn't care about that stuff.
Right.
So it was kind of like a rude awakening. So then, you know, I started drawing some lines on some charts, and I know you're not the most technical guy, but when it comes like a believer in technical analysis, but I started drawing some lines and some charts, and I turned the 20 into 300, and then I was like, holy shit, like this is my gig, you know, like this is what I'm gonna do. And so I just, since then, you know, then I transitioned from doing that, and then I learned about like call options. And so I was like, so I lost like 50% on some stupid energy trade or something. And I was like, there's no way I'm ever going to get this money back, but I don't want to sell at a 50% loss. So then I took the 50%, I sold it, and I just put it all in call options, and I ended up tripling my money on that. So then I was like, oh, well, I guess derivatives are the way to go. So I did that. And then I was like, this is what, and then I actually, then I, what I was is I was just investing in equities through call options. So I wasn't like really trading derivatives at the time. I was just like, oh, I think this is going up, so I'll buy call options in it. And that worked really well for a while. And then eventually I just got more involved. I started following the options flow. I started, you know, studying the gamma of the markets, you know, like your squeegee metric type stuff. Then I was you know, trying to learn at how to time delta hedging and all that stuff. And then I got introduced to Lucci and to Wall Street Jesus. And so I've been trading with them for a while.
Oh shit. So, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, that's sort of the path I took. And then, you know, before I needed to transition out of fighting eventually.
Right.
You know, I plan on fighting 5 more years for sure.
Fucking but awesome.
But at the end of that, you know, like I don't want to just be like, oh, well now what? You know, like I'm not going to make enough money to take care of myself for the rest of my life. So I needed a job.
Yeah.
And so I was like, shit, I'm going to become like an entrepreneur or something, except I'm like a socially awkward person. I can't sell anybody shit. I don't understand like basic human interaction that well. So being an entrepreneur, not really something that I thought I would be good at. And once I got a taste of the market, I was like, I can just sit in my house. I can do this. I can follow it obsessively because I'm an obsessive person. And then that's how I got into trading the most, you know.
That's awesome. So now you run your own, you know, you run your own hedge fund in your pajamas at home if you want. And the best part is you don't have any LPs, so you don't have to take shit from anybody except for yourself, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
How long ago was it that you started with Lucci?
I started with them probably not too long ago. I would say like maybe 6 months ago.
Okay, cool.
About 6 months because I was just doing my own technical analysis and stuff, but then I started following the options flow.
Right.
You know, and to tell you the truth, the more I did the options flow, like the more money I lost.
Right.
So I was like, I'm going back to just my old way. And then eventually I found like the Wall Street Jesus on Twitter, and I started following him, and I started noticing the stuff he said lined up a lot better. And so he would be like the perfect person to be able to teach me that. So, you know, I went in the room and I didn't say anything for a couple months, and I just sort of studied what those guys said, and eventually, you know, like introduced myself like the day before I had a fight. They're like, holy shit, you're and then they're like, oh really, like you're a professional fighter, like what?
That's awesome.
Yeah. So then that's how I got. Now I finally am starting to make money, you know, following that kind of stuff as well.
That's awesome. Yeah. Lucci's a good dude too, man. I've known him for probably like 7 years now. And he's as real as they get. You can say what you want about him, man, but he knows what he's doing. And I think the most important thing is he's an honest person. He's a guy that tries to better himself. You know, he's like you said in that interview, man, he's trying to make himself the complete person instead of just Sang Lucci this traitor, the same way you're trying to be, you know, the complete Nick Lentz, right?
Yeah, I mean I've never seen the guy say anything negative or not be totally upfront. He helps everybody as much as he can, you know? Like I mean And also, the other thing is he's very upfront about his losses, and I wish he was a little more upfront about his wins, you know, so you could kind of see that more often, you know. But some days, you know, I'll just light $5,000 on fire, you know, like just at a snap of a finger. I'm like, oh my God, I cannot believe that I just did that. Like, that's gone. Like, I could have just, you know, I could at least like cook something on it in my house or something, but instead I lit it on fire in the market. And then he's like, oh, I lost 150 today. I'm like, oh, I'm like, I guess it's not so bad. I guess, you know, I guess I should calm down a little bit, you know?
Yeah. When you go through his Instagram and you see him post his monthly P&L and he lost like 400 racks, it puts things in perspective, huh?
Yeah, yeah, you know, and I followed him in some of his trades, you know, and you know, we've made a lot of money, so it's like it's a great thing, you know. Like I said, I wish he would post more of the wins as well, just because I think it's cool to see people win as well, you know. You don't want to see people lose all the time, you know. Even though he's not losing, you know, he's like you see him post the video at the end of the month. He, like you said, he lost the 400 the one time, but the other times, like I see him, he's like, oh, I lost 100 today. Like, oh, I just blew up 200. And by the end of the month, he's plus 500 or something. You know, like wow.
Well, I think he realizes that that posting your losses is one of these things that I think the main problem with Wall Street in general and with people in the financial business, whether you're some, you know, total fuckface that runs a, you know, online platform like, you know, my buddy Pete defected from these online platforms because he knew that they were basically just trying to front run him, or whether you're, you know, a sell side analyst selling research or whatever. The general problem in the industry is just you can't find anybody trustworthy, and you can't find anybody that's honest, and you really, it's extraordinarily difficult to find somebody that wants to look out for you, that and that genuinely wants to help you instead of helping themselves. I mean, no industry is a breeding ground for assholes and pricks and selfish people more than finance. And so I think Lucci understands that, and I think the idea of sharing his losses more so than his wins, because we know long term he's done well. I think he knows that that's important to try to build that rapport with people. And, you know, I think he probably does it to just try to be a better person as well, too. So, I mean, I got to give him a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So when you first started trading, that was 2008, you said, right when you first, right after when you got into the UFC. When did you put yourself through that pressure cooker of going through the 8 hours a day of just trying to learn everything? How long ago was
that? That wasn't until, you know, like I would say like 2014-ish, 2015-ish, where I really got serious about it. You know, I had, like I said, in the 2008, I was certain that the market was the devil.
Right.
You know, so then I didn't involve myself in it at all. And actually, like, that was the first time I had money. So I, like, bought a house for, like, one-tenth of what it cost the person who sold it to me.
Right.
So I was thinking I was sitting pretty, you know? But then eventually, I used to, like, play video games. I used to have hobbies. But none of them were fulfilling to me.
Right.
And so I was like, well, how am I going to have a fulfilling hobby, you know? And I was like, well, I got to make money. So I started studying the market, and I haven't been like a full-time trade. I've only been a full-time trader for about, you know, where I do it every day. I wake up, I study at night, like, and I'm actually spending real money. I've only done that every day for like, you know, a little over 2 years. So it hasn't been that long, but I've been in the market since about, you know, 2012. Ish.
Well, the interesting thing is when I read your tweets, you come off like somebody that's been in the market for a while. A lot of times when you see anybody from outside of the world of finance that's just starting to get into it, or oftentimes, you know, guys that just try but never really can put their finger on the pulse of things. Like, I read something that you wrote the other day, and I'm just going off the top of my head. I can't remember exactly what it was. But somebody was talking about putting a trade on. You said something like, don't chase it, you know, be patient. I think it's still got to dump a little bit more or something like that. And I remember reading it and just thinking like, man, all right, like that's actually like a very like profound and sophisticated way to look at whatever the guy was suggesting. You know, most people that have only been looking at the markets for a couple of years like you have, I mean, they start by learning a lot of hard lessons. You know, you don't always have to chase momentum. You don't always have to chase the tape. You don't always have to chase your losses. You know, sometimes it's okay to sit back and do fuck all for a day. You don't have to, you know, execute 50 trades a day. And that was, I don't know, man, that was the vibe that I got from you. Do you think being a fighter maybe helps you remain calm when you trade?
I think it definitely helps. And I think the way that you train as a professional fighter, like the discipline, the hard work, the technical side of the fighting, where you're always doing the same things over and over again, and you learn how to handle the pressure and you learn how to handle discomfort. I think that's one of the biggest things, is the discomfort of losing money. You know, like I certainly don't like losing money. But if I think I'm on the right side and everything is lining up, and I think the technicals line up, like, I'm not selling that thing. And I think that's a big part of that fighting career, because the pressure, the ability to train, and also just the ability to put a training schedule together that is actually going to produce something, right? So like when I said I studied 8 hours a day every day for a year, that's a lot of studying, you know. and it wasn't just blind studying, it was focused and direct, and I had goals and I mapped it out, and so every single day I do that, and I do it at night, and I study the macro, and I follow what the, you know, I'm trying to figure out what everybody's thinking, what everybody's saying, you know, like what everybody's, and I want to become a student of the game because I don't want it to run me over. You know what
right.
I mean?
Hell yeah. Like, yep. Hell yeah.
Like, I don't want to get too cocky. I don't want to think like I know what's going on and then one day something changes because it can, you know? So I definitely want to be ready and I want to be smart. And also it was so hard for me to learn the market myself, like to teach myself, that like you said, anytime I can talk to somebody about it, I want to be as helpful as possible because I know that the information isn't there. You know, there isn't a more secretive, open network around.
Right.
You know, everyone wants to keep the info to themselves. You know, they don't want to share it. And if they do share it, they charge obscene amounts of money for right. something that's not any good anyways.
Right.
You know, and that's one of the things I learned when I was trading is, you know, maybe it was hard work. Maybe I just have a natural talent for this thing. But I would be trading with people and talking to people that have been doing this a long time. And in 1 month, I would be light years ahead of them. And so like there was nothing I could talk to them about anymore. So that's sort of been my thing is every time I wanted to get good at something, I can get very good at it fast because I'm just a obsessive person. But the downfall in that in my life is my personal life can go to hell very quickly because I focus so hard that I don't see the world around me.
Well, I think that you also need to have the capacity too. I mean, I think you're generally a bright person. I mean, just listening to you speak in a couple of the interviews that I was watching of yours, I mean, just the way that you come off. I mean, I think you have to have the capacity. So when you talk about, you know, just kind of blowing past people that have been in the market for a while, Nick, it's a whole fucking industry full of those people, dude, that like, you know, they just don't have, like, the learning curve isn't there. And it's not a bad thing and it's not a good thing, but like, a lot of people that are in this industry have just reached their capacity and that's it. So, you know, the hunger that you have to continue to learn, I think is awesome, you know, because that is what keeps you moving forward, what keeps you growing. In addition to that, you know, the attitude that you take, which is if you don't keep up with it, it's going to run you over, is, you know, I think you're light years ahead of your time with that because that's something that people like me, like I had to learn that shit by just getting my face fucking knocked in by the market, not fighting, yeah. Right? But like just getting my balls punted like on a daily basis. Just like this sucks. Like this, why am I still doing this? You know, like you just show yeah. up, like yeah, I sit down at this fucking computer, I flush money down the toilet, and then what? Like I come back and do it tomorrow? Like what the fuck is that? So like to adopt that attitude, man, I think is really smart. One of the things I always talk about is, you know, arrogance in finance. And I think the more arrogant you are, the more of a chance you have of just straight up going bust. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And the most important thing is in the market when you, it doesn't matter how smart you are. It doesn't matter if your arrogance is right. It doesn't matter if you judge every situation correctly. If the people with the money want to spend it on something, they'll spend it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so it doesn't matter if you're right. It doesn't matter. Like if you thought, you know, Tesla or space was overrated garbage at 400 and it went to 960, like it doesn't matter what you thought.
Right.
You got ran over. Right, you're broke.
Right,
and the guys sitting back there in the hedge funds and stuff are laughing at you because they just knew that's where the money was gonna go. So that's one. The other thing is that intelligence can get you in a lot of trouble sometimes. You know, if you can't step back away from it and start looking at what really matters, and it doesn't. And I said this the other day. It doesn't matter if you have $10,000 or $100,000 or $10 million in your trading account, like you're insignificant to the system. Like your money doesn't matter. I mean, the Fed's going to give $1 trillion a day, for God's sakes, you know, like to banks and throw money around everywhere. So you just have to be adaptable and you have to just kind of accept the game for what it is. You know, I do the same thing. I don't like to be short things. you know, that often, even though I think I'm more naturally gifted at shorting things. I just don't like the stress. I don't like the problem. And I certainly think the market is rigged to the upside. So that's one of the things like I had to get over pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's your comment about being insignificant in the grand scheme of things is, you know, resonates quite a bit. I think that's, you know, and there's guys that have been in the market for decades that, you know, have a very ethnocentric view of things and think that they're at the middle of the markets, which, again, another arrogant kind of thing to think, man. So I think having that humility and being humble enough to realize that, I mean, I think that's extraordinarily helpful. To go back to something you just said a moment ago, you know, about pressure. I mean, that's another huge kind of bump in the road that you might have just been able to pass by or really been helped out with, you know, due to your fighting career, because, you know, for some people watching the P&L on the screen, while it's painful to everybody when it's going down, me, you, it doesn't matter who it is, you know, that's their first kind of exposure to real pressure too, right? Like that, if you're not a trader and you go in and your P&L's red for the first day, I mean, people lose their shit.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, it gets progressively. It's one of the few things, just like fighting, where it gets, the more money you have in the account, it just gets progressively harder, because you just start seeing bigger number swings and stuff. You know, like I remember I was pretty good fighter outside the UFC, and I got like a last second call to replace somebody, and I ended up fighting this guy in my first UFC fight, and he was like the super top level guy. Everyone thought he was going to be the next guy. And I remember I went out there, and like the crowd was so much bigger, the pressure was so much more, and I went out there and I threw a punch and I missed completely, and the guy like double legged me and he threw me against the cage and he was just like raining down punches on me, and I was like, holy crap. like this is a whole different level of being, you know, like this is different. And then, you know, I sort of got my ass kicked for 2.5 minutes, and by the end of that 2.5 minutes, I ended up beating him up, and then by the end of the fight, I ended up winning. But like, I think that's, like you said, that's a big part of being in the market is, you know, like that the first time that you actually get hit hard, you know, because when I first got into the market, I actually had a pretty easy ride. Like every decision I made was like right. Like I was just like, I just got lucky, and I just happened to be right like a bunch of times. And like I was like, oh, like this is pretty easy. And then I ended up putting a lot of money in some stupid energy trade, and it just got demolished. Like I gave all my profits back plus some in like an hour. And so yeah, that was stressful. My wife actually brings up the first time I lost $100, or not $100, $1,000. I had $1,000 loss that in one day, and I was devastated for a week. Yeah. I was like, I can't, they came out with earnings and it shot straight down, and then it started to level up and it went up a little, and I bought it, and like the next tick, it just went straight through the floor. And I lost like $1,000 at the time. That was a ton of money for me.
Sure.
And so I was like, like I said, even with the professional side of it, I was devastated. And even though like I didn't need the money or anything, because I was trying to like talk to myself in the mirror, I'm like, Nick, it's a grand. Who cares? Like, relax. But it really fucked with me for a while. And then. Like now that's, you know, I mean, if I lose $1,000, I lose that on a daily basis, you know, like a couple grand here, a couple grand there. So,
well, hopefully you don't lose it daily, you know, hopefully not daily. No. Hopefully you make it some days.
No, I didn't. No, like I said, like, I mean, I make a lot more money than I lose. That's for sure.
Good, good. Well, yeah. And just to go back to what you were saying a second ago, you know, when you, and I don't know if you listened, I did a podcast with Lucci a while back about, you know, blowing up your account and what that feels like. And I actually tweeted it out a couple days ago because I know with the market being crazy, I know people are blowing up. And so we put a podcast down basically just for the purpose of when you blow up. So you got something to listen to and a reminder that it happens to everybody. But one of the things that we talked about on that podcast is when you start thinking to yourself about the shit that you could buy with the money that you're red on your P&L. So if you're, you know, if Nick, if you're trading with a $250,000 account, you know, and you have a, you know, you have a $5,000 loss in a day, which percentage wise is not that big of a deal. But when you step out of the account, I mean, $5,000 is a lot of fucking money. You know what I mean? That's a brand new motorcycle. And you start thinking,
I just did it the other day. I was like, I told my wife, hey, we need a new fridge. And so I was like, fine, just start looking for a new fridge. And so she looks for a new fridge, and the next day I actually lost just about that much money, how much a fridge cost. And she comes up to me and she's like, oh, hey, I picked out a fridge. I'm like, we're not getting a fridge anymore. we're annexing the fridge.
Yeah, that's right. You're not going to be able to liquidate it and put the money back in the trading account at any point, right? It's just like warm food, get used to it.
So, yeah, so I thought that too. And then I timed this crash. I timed it pretty well, and I was short the whole market. So, but I was about 2.5 weeks early. So that was a rough 2.5 weeks before this thing actually melted.
I was right there with you.
So I was having some heart attacks during that little thing, because like I kind of had a good run up through December. January started. I made a little bit of money. I thought I was sitting pretty. And it then, you know, it always, I wish it didn't track, you know, per year, because it's just a dumb way to track money. You know, what happened that, you know, like as if the whole year didn't matter right after December. like that doesn't matter. So then, so, you know, year ended, like the first day I'm like 25 in the hole. It's like, oh, this is great to look at every day.
you go from feeling like you crushed it to a total failure between like December 31st and January 1st. Like, what the fuck happened?
So then every time I open the computer, it's like, and I found myself like any time someone came upstairs, I would like switch it to the charts so the profit and loss wasn't up, you know? Because like, I don't want them to see. I subconsciously don't want anyone to see that I had lost the money. But yeah, so like I was down quite a bit going into the crash. But you know, obviously, if you time a crash, you make a lot of money. So
that's right.
So I did well on that side.
That's like the guys.
The only thing that
The
only thing that I was worried about, and I cashed out early a bunch of times on shorts, is I was worried they were going to shut the markets down, and I didn't want to be trapped in options because of that.
Yeah, I think that's exceptionally smart. I thought the same exact thing. I thought once I saw David Faber and Scott Wapner shitting their pants a couple nights ago and calling for the market to be closed on Twitter, both like within 2 hours of each other, I couldn't help but think, oh, this is the administration telling them to kind of get the narrative out there that they're definitely going to do it. So that was a Sunday night. So I put out a tweet saying, hey, you know, if you got options that expire next week, you may want to think about cleaning that up a little bit, because if they halt the markets, I don't know what's going to happen. And I was just like, please God, just open Monday morning. Just, you know, give me 5 minutes between 9:30 and 9:35. I swear I'll clean up the whole portfolio, you know. And so that's what I did. But you never know, man, because when these guys start, you know, when the quote unquote market doesn't go the way that these guys want it to, you know, all of a sudden it's, they take their ball and they go home. Right.
Well, what scared me the most is I, all the people I follow, because I try to follow a wide range of stock market people. So I get, you know, even though I don't agree with them, I want to see the information that they're saying.
Right.
And I saw so many bears that you could see had secretly flipped long, begging for the market to be shut down. And so I was like, wow, now we don't even have them on our side. So maybe they will shut this damn thing down. And so I, like this weekend, I had like a bunch of Tesla puts. I had, what else did I have? I had some SPY puts. I had, I had sold some calls on some other things. So yeah, that's how I was on Monday. I was like, please, please just open this damn thing. Because if you don't, I'm going to be so screwed. But then they did. So it was a good day. Good day.
One of the analogs. So I was with you, man. I was early on the market crash, and I was starting to think maybe it wasn't going to happen. I mean, I didn't really, you know, nothing surprises me anymore. I knew the coronavirus was going to be a huge issue, but I was like, well, maybe the market's just not going to fucking care. Like, you never know. I mean, the game is basically rigged. So I withstood those 2 or 3 weeks before the crash as well. Actually, for me, it's probably more like 4 or 5 weeks. And that's a miserable feeling. But then all of a sudden when it turns, you're like, oh. And it reminded me, like, obviously I'm not a professional fighter. I'm just an amateur, jiu-jitsu guy that I've only been training for a couple of years. But it reminds me of just so many instances when I've been in tournaments or been in matches where, you know, you just keep thinking to yourself, like, okay, like, I just got to stay with this guy for one more second. Like, he's wearing himself out. Or, you know, you got the choke on and you just need, you know, it's that mind fuck where, like, you know, the person is hoping you're going to let it go and that, you know, you're going to cramp up or your arms are going to wear out or your legs are going to, you know, wear out or whatever. And all you're thinking is, man, I just got to hold on for one more second because this dude's going to be knocked the fuck out in a second. Like, you can't stop it if the choke's on. And, you know, you get to those points where, like, you're talking about being extremely uncomfortable. And then all of a sudden, man, when it breaks your way, that's a great feeling, isn't it?
Oh, it's the best feeling. You know, one of the things I'm best at in jiu-jitsu is I think I have the best arm and guillotine in the world. I really do. And if anyone who's ever trained with me agrees, and that one of the biggest things about submitting people with the arm and guillotine is you have to be very calm and you have to be patient until you have it.
Right.
And when you have it, then that's when the squeeze comes. And the squeeze has nothing to do with your arms. It's all about your body and your position and where you are and, you know, how you cut off the blood, you know? So it's a more of a methodical way of doing it. So yeah, no, I definitely feel you. But when you're in a fight, especially in a fight and you're tired and you squeeze and you hope that guy doesn't get up. 'Cause I've been there too, where I tried my damnedest to choke the guy to death. And then he got out and I had absolutely nothing left.
Yeah.
And I remember there was a couple fights early in my career where my arms were so tired that I actually enjoyed getting hit in the face because I was like, I need my arms to like rest. So if he just keeps hitting me, I'll be okay. I'll be okay. You know, as long as I don't have to lift these damn arms up, I'm going to be okay. Give me 30 seconds, you know? I'll take the punches.
Right. Oh, that's funny. Let my face do some of the work, right? You
know, they give me the 30 seconds, then I can fight again.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny, man. It's is there anybody else in the world of fighting that you talk to about trading? I mean, Ben Askren sent me a message the other day, and you know, you and him are really the first two people in the world of mixed martial arts or in the world of fighting in general that I know at least keep an eye on the markets. I mean, is there anybody else out there that you talk to about it?
No. I try to talk to people about things, especially the market, because I can talk about the market all day. You know, it's my only hobby. So it's my job and my hobby. So it's really all I focus on. But no, fighters, they glaze over like in 2 seconds. They ask me some stuff about it. They're like, because they know, like, they'll see me during the water break, like opening my phone and checking. And they'll be like, holy shit, you made $5,000 at practice? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, can you show me how to do that? And within like 30 seconds of me explaining something, like, they already left.
Right.
So no, most of them don't have a taste for it. And the ones that do, There is a big gambling in fighters. There's a lot of good professional fighters that are also good gamblers.
Oh, is that right?
So they bet on, you know, fights, obviously. They bet on football. They bet on, you know, anything you can bet on, they bet on it. And there's a couple of them that are pretty good at it. And so there's sort of a connection between, you know, being a degenerate gambler and being in the stock market. You know, there is a connection there. And so,
oh, I know the connection, Nick.
So I think that they could transition into it, but I think one of the things that they wouldn't like is just the daily grind of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like just the daily grind and the daily stress of like always having to know what's going on. You know, like right before you go to bed, like you're checking, you know, what is China open at? And, you know, like what's going on here? And there's this company's, you know, just, you know, selling shares in Hong Kong or whatever. Like I don't think they have the mental capacity. Not that they're not capable, they just don't want to deal with it, especially being physically tired all the time. So I think that they could be good at it, but I just don't think that they want to be.
Yeah, I think it's a lot more learning that needs to be done than a lot of people think. Because I have people that come up to me in general too, like people I went to high school with and, you know, people I just see around at the bars and different, you know, people just that come in and out of my life. They, you know, they always want to ask you like, dude, can you show me how to do this? Can you show me how to do that? And then nobody ever wants to listen. And I don't think anybody understands the amount of work that goes into understanding all this shit. I mean, you were grinding at it 8 hours a day for a whole year. I mean, you know, I was doing the same, right? I'm on Twitter every day. I'm watching the market every day. And I still don't know shit, you know? So I think people don't understand that the learning track for something like this is very long. If you want to be successful and you want to inform yourself and you really want to understand more than just, you know, I buy this and if it goes up, that's good. And if it goes down, that's bad.
Yeah. And I can feel their pain because the first time I tried to learn about the stock market, I failed miserably. Like I bought a bunch of books and I'm in one of the things that has made me gifted in the ability to like look at charts and stuff is I have great spatial perception reasoning, but I'm also severely dyslexic. So it was very hard for me to study out of books. So thankfully, you know, nowadays you can get audiobooks and you can watch videos and there's online training courses and all that stuff. So I think if fighters got into that, they would be a little better at it. Cause there's actually a lot, you know, there's a disconnect, I think, with a lot of guys. Cause a lot of these guys are college educated and stuff, but nobody likes to just sit down and read books and do that. It's right. Has nothing to do with like being an athlete. And when you're an athlete, you know that most stuff you read out of a book is bullshit anyways.
Right.
So, right. I mean, I've read some physical science, like exercise books and I'm like, well, these guys have never done anything in their life, you know, like they don't have the slightest clue what's going on. And so, you know, and also fighters in general are sort of one of the most professional, how do you say that? As far as like athletics goes, they're the most, what do you say? Like they don't trust the system.
Okay.
That much. You know what I mean? Like they're distrustful of society in general. You know, you find a lot more conspiracy theorists. You find a lot more libertarians. You find a lot more people like that in the fighting world than you do in, let's say, football.
Right.
They're just like all Democrats and they don't care. Right. You know? And in the fighting world, you have that sort of people that would probably do well in the markets, but you know, they distrust the system already.
Yeah, and rightfully so, right?
Yeah, of course. You know, I mean, one of the biggest changes in my life is when I was young, I used to be like a Republican, and I thought I knew what I was doing, and I lived with a guy who was like down on his luck, you know, and you know, like when you're down on your luck, because we've all been there, you start like watching YouTube videos and stuff. And all of a sudden, like one day, he just like would not shut up about 9/11. He would just not shut the fuck up about it. And I was just, and he was living with me. And I was like, bro, you got to stop. Like, I don't want to hear it anymore. Like I don't want to hear about it, you know? And he's like, Tower 7 and this and buildings don't fall that fast, Nick. And I'm just like, you know, I've had enough. I don't want to hear it. And then, but he kept going. So eventually I'm like, I'm going to prove this guy wrong. You know, so then I start studying it, and then I'm like, oh my God. Maybe I'm I'm like, oh my God, I'm the one that's wrong.
This motherfucker was onto something the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. And so since those days, you know, I've been a little mistrusting of the system in general. And I always wanted to find a way that I could profit and take care of myself while still being mistrusting of the government, of jobs, of all that stuff. And that, I felt like the stock market was the perfect place for that.
The cool thing about the stock market is you can be your own guy. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to be some fucking guy in a suit, you know, checking in at JP Morgan, taking meetings three times a day, and then going to some yacht club at night. You know, it's with the internet and with, you know, all the great brokerages that are out there. If you got some capital, you can do it however you want to do it, man. You can be Mr. fucking Brooks Brothers finance guy, like one of these dildos that goes on CNBC every day and, you know, wears the fancy glasses and the bow tie. I mean, you can be one of those guys. You know, there's room for you to be yourself, not just in how you trade and how you invest, but just in general, right? Like, it's this amalgam of all these different types of people. You know, like Lucci is a totally different guy than Ross Gerber, who's a totally different guy than me, who's a totally different guy than you. Like, we bring all these unique kind of attributes to it and our own slant on it, and it's sitting right there, dude. Like, all this huge pile of trillions of dollars in liquidity is sitting right in front of all of us, man. And, like, we all have the ability to click a couple of things on our screen and, you know, on any given day, buy the right option and, you know, 100x our account if we want to and if we're in the right place at the right time. And that's what's fucking cool about it, man. Like, that's, you know, it's like being on the mat, right? Like Joe Rogan said on one of his podcasts, like, your only currency when you're on the mat is what you have on the mat, right? And it's like your only currency when you're in the stock market is the decisions that you make, the good ones that you make. You congratulate yourself for, and the bad ones, you only have yourself to blame, right? It kind of like puts everybody on an even playing field.
No, I agree 100%. And like you said, the greatest thing about it is you have the ultimate control. And as long as, you know, you can figure out a way that you can make yourself win, you know, like I know a lot of amazing traders that are only good in certain markets. You know what I mean? Like they're good in this market, the volatile ones.
Right.
But in like a trending one, they lose their ass.
Right.
So they just take like 3 months off. You know, they work. And then like when it comes to the time that they can't do their thing, they just go away. And that's one of the hardest things about the stock market is to do that. The best gig, I don't know like how much do they pay these goofs that go on CNBC like they do distributors on Fox and stuff, like do they pay those guys?
No, like well, the people that are on the desk, like you know, the Nigerians and Wapner and all those guys, I mean, they all get paid, but the guys that they have on as guests, they don't get paid. They're up there kind of riding for their brand, right? So if you're a Morgan Stanley analyst, the point of you going on is to represent Morgan Stanley. Or if you're you know, if you're Peter Schiff, go ahead.
There was some guy on there, I think it was yesterday, saying that you should refinance your house to buy stocks right now. Like, I can't believe some of the stuff these guys say. You know what I mean? Like, imagine that. Imagine during a stock market crash, you go on TV and you say, hey, you should refinance your house and take the money and put it in the stock market as it crashes. You know, and they let that guy on TV.
Yeah, on the same network. On the same network where precisely zero fucking people warned about the stock market taking a 30% shit in 3 weeks, right?
I also love because I have it on the freaking TV all the time until I can't take it, and then I'll turn on Bloomberg sometimes. But I'll have CNBC in the background, and the guys will say the exact opposite thing they said just the day before. You know, they're like this virus is no big deal, it's gonna wash over, and the next day they're like, this is the biggest deal we've ever had. You know, like what are we gonna do? This is awful. But I guess that's kind of how life is.
Yeah, I guess analysis is supposed to be forward looking, right, Nick? So the easy way out is for them to come up and opine on something that's already happened, which is what a lot of them do.
Yeah, I mean that's all analysts do. They just wait for a stock to drop and then downgrade it.
Isn't that insane?
They're like, you know, I mean, be it like Boeing is down 200 points and they're like, yeah, you know, it's, you shouldn't buy it. it's ridiculous. Or they all fight for each other, you know, like Apple's going to 500 or something, you know, like they just say the most ridiculous things all the time. And some of those guys get paid a lot of money.
I know. It's sick. You know, when you explain to people how sell side analysis works, like, and I remember first learning about it, you know, basically all these analysts represent banks that want to do investment banking business with the companies. Nobody thinks for themselves and everybody's backward looking. There's that one analyst, Nick, that, you know, 4 weeks ago came out when Boeing was at 300 and said, Boeing's probably going to wind up at 100 soon. You know, like, it's only now after it drops. People are like, downgrade, you know. Yeah. It's just, it's absurd, man. What did you think when you first learned about how that worked?
Well, the way I learned about all this stuff is I would study. I would figure out my plan. I would think, this is what I'm going to do. And almost always, the people on TV disagreed with me. And so at first I was like, well, I must just be wrong. You know what I mean? Like, I must just be wrong. And then I would see the trade work out exactly how I thought it was going to. And I just got scared out of it. And that kept happening to me all the time. I'd be like, oh, I think silver's really good here. And people would be like, you know, this is not going to work. You know, it's too economically sensitive. And then I wouldn't buy it. And the shit would go up a million miles an hour. You know, don't buy bonds here. They're already down too much. They're at 2%. I mean, they can't go lower than 2%.
Right.
You know, and you have like smart people come on all the time. You know, what was it in like December? They had like priced in like 4 rate hikes or something. You know, like in 2018, something like that. They're like, we're gonna have 4 rate hikes. You better get ready. You know, or fucking JP Morgan cat was on there. You know, talking about how whatever 3% is we're not going any lower than that. You know, like it's just mind numbing the amount of information that's out there, but almost none of it being right.
Yeah, right. And another instance where you're like, all right, just punch me in the face for a little while. Let me just stop listening to this. I'll take the face shots at this point.
Actually, and then I started following like the options flow, you know, and I did that not that long ago. I had Boeing puts, and it went straight up in the morning, and so I was like losing a ton of money, and I was like, man, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm like, I don't think I am. Like, I know this thing is going down. Like, I know, like, I know that it's going down. I know that I'm right, and it starts going down, and I'm like a couple grand up on the trade. And then I see all this option flow start coming in bullish for it. And I'm like, man, I guess I'm wrong. And so I sell it and I flip bullish. It goes up like 1 point and then just tanks. So I just, not only did I give all my profits back, I was on the complete wrong side of the trade. And so I have call options that are completely worthless. And so I lost money both ways. So by following other people. So yeah, that's one of the things that's the hardest to when to listen to people and when not, because you always want to be open-minded, but I mean, you got to be careful.
Yeah, and there's a lot of analysis and game theory that goes with it too. Like, when you're talking about analysts, like, you have to realize, like, a lot of these times analysts have a vested interest. They're, you know, downgrading something so that they can buy it, or they're upgrading it so they can sell it or something like that. And you know, if they're not just doing the opposite of what they're saying, some of them are just dumb as fucking rocks, you know? So you have to kind of be the person that determines what that is. And it's the same deal with following options flow, right? Like, you need to determine like whether a whack of Boeing calls going off means that the president's going to come out at 11:30 today and say, oh, we're going to backstop Boeing, which is what happened. Or, you know, if it's somebody hedging against the newly initiated short position, right? So there's still a lot of man, the whole thing's a mind fuck, man, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely is. But, you know, I mean, where else can someone like me, you know, I mean, I dropped out of college. I became a professional fighter. Like, what am I going to do? Am I gonna go get a job? like what's your work experience? I have none. Like, I've never had a job. I've never had a normal job. I've always been an athlete. Will you hire me? Like, are you good at anything? Well, not particularly. I can fight really well.
beat the shit out of you.
I
fight really
well. You know, I think I'm a pretty good dad. like, well, what do you say? You know, or what do you do? So the stock market gives you that. You know what I mean? A lot of people dislike it. It gets shit on all the time. But it honestly is one of the one things in life that if you really want to, you can get good at, and that you can take care of yourself and your family for a very long time. You know what I mean? Like, what else is there out there that you can do that? And you can do it on your own rules, like you said. You can develop your own style. You can do it, everything that you want to, and be yourself. And that's almost impossible in this world right now, you know, to be able to do that stuff, even in the fight game. You know, like when I started fighting, I was really good at fighting, but I was a grappler and they didn't like grappling as much as they do now. So I fought and I actually got fired I was like 5-0. I lost my first fight and I got fired. Like, and they were like, we just don't want you to grapple people. it's like, oh, okay. Well, I suppose I have to become a striker then, you know? And then, so that was a whole different thing. So there's very few things in life where you can like be yourself and at the same time develop some, like a way to take care of your family. And so the stock market gives you that with all the shitty parts of it and everything else, you know? So I got to be thankful for that.
Yeah, and it's a really cool time to be a market participant, like especially with Twitter and social media, because you can put your shit out there and you can get a bunch of responses to it and you can follow, like you said, man, smart fucking thing that you said. You follow people that you agree with, but you also follow people that you disagree with, which is like a super smart thing that not a lot of people do. But yeah, it's never been like a better time to just be an individual like market participant, because you can make a social media name for yourself and you can kind of, you know, I would never be talking to you if we both didn't have Twitter and we both weren't in the market. You know what I mean? Like, where's the tie that binds me and Nick Lentz? Like, we're two people that would have went through our whole lives probably never having a conversation together. And like back in the day when the open outcry pits were open in Chicago, I mean, they're still open now, but back when there was people on them, like the extent of your creativity was like what you were going to have drawn on your jacket when you were in the pit so that people like, yeah. People knew who you were, right? And like what your little 3 or 4 letter name was going to be on your fucking name tag. But like now guys make personalities out of themselves and, you know, it's awesome. And it's an awesome time to be a content creator and stuff like that too. because, you know, if Nick Lentz wants to go out and start the Nick Lentz show, like, that's it. Like, you're out there. You know what I mean? You don't need fucking CBS, NBC, somebody to sign you on to a deal. You're like, I got my Twitter account, and I got my Facebook, and I got my followers, and that's that. Like, so it's a really cool, yeah. It's a really cool time to kind of establish yourself as an individual in the market. And, yeah, you said before that a lot of the UFC guys will bet on fights. Is that allowed?
Yeah. You can bet on fights. Yeah, I mean, you're not. There's no. I don't know. Like you're not going to tank yourself. You know what I mean? Like obviously you shouldn't bet. You wouldn't bet on yourself and then lose. But like you can bet on other people's fights. Yeah, I wouldn't even say that it's legal. I think it's encouraged. You know what I mean? Like to be part of the fight. Like I'll tell you right now. I am watching zero fights that I don't have money bet on. I'm just not doing it. I have no interest. I fight every day of my life. I don't want to do it on the weekend. If I don't have money on it, I ain't watching it.
Right.
So yeah, I mean I don't think it's frowned upon, you know, at least not in the professional circle. I mean, maybe some stupid fan out there is like, oh, you shouldn't be able to do that or something, you know? But, I mean, a lot of fighters don't make that much money.
Right.
So you got to do a lot of stuff. You know what I mean? I would say most fighters don't make money. Probably 95% of fighters don't make enough to take care of themselves. And especially don't make enough to take care of themselves for their entire life. You know what I mean? There's probably 5% of the, if you take all the organizations and stuff of fighters that like actually, if they had to miss a fight or or they had to take a year off or something that could actually survive. Most of them are living paycheck to paycheck. So, you know, to deny them the right to at least bet on something or to have some other form of income would be wrong.
And when you think about when, like for me, for instance, you know, I've only been training for like a couple of years. But when you learn about like all the regional circuits too, that guys come up on, like CFFC and, you know, I mean, even Bellator, and you start to hear about what these guys are getting paid and you're like, man, like it's a fucking grind. Like, not only do I have a whole new respect for fighting in general, because once you start training, you understand like actually like what the hell is happening and how absolutely grueling it is and how immensely difficult it is. But like you really have an immense amount of respect for guys that, you know, come up locally and you know, fight their way to the top, really, from, you know, going through regional circuits, fighting at a local gyms and just making a grind out of it, right?
Yeah. I mean one of the things that I've never been able to understand, and you obviously understand it from training in jiu-jitsu and doing with stuff, but fighting is one of the rare... Oh, there's the market. Sorry.
I just heard the bell in the background.
Fighting is one of the rare things where every dude somehow thinks that he's good at it. And it's like this natural thing where people think that they understand fighting. You know, nobody would ever, you know, walk up to a professional ping pong player and be like, I'm going to kick your ass in ping pong. Like that's not going to fucking happen, you know? Like, nobody's going to think that because you just get demolished. Right. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to, like, go on the golf course and be like, oh, this, I'm a pro. Like, I'm going to sink this thing. I'm going to get an eagle or whatever, you know? Like, that just doesn't exist. But fighting, there's a whole crew. Not even a whole – there's more people than not think, especially if they're bigger or heavier, right? Like they weigh 200 pounds. They're like, you think I can beat Mighty Mouse? You know, like how many people have asked me that? I'm like, no, God, he would absolutely murder you. Like, you have no chance. Not only you would land nothing. Like, anyone that's in the UFC, you have zero chance of beating. Like, negative chance. So fighting is one of those rare things that, even as a professional, there's a whole lot of people that think they can do it better than you. And most people, they couldn't, you know, they can barely put one foot in front of the other, much less fight.
Well, you know, yeah. What, Nick, it doesn't cost anything to sit around and talk shit, right? It's like that. There's always that, every time there's a fight, somebody posts this cartoon of a guy sitting on his couch eating a fucking bag of Doritos, like criticizing the fight, you know, like, oh, I wouldn't have thrown that kick. It's like, bitch, you can't even get up off the fucking couch. Like,
you know, every time I see that, I always wonder where that picture came from. You know, like, if
this, oh, you know, poor what I'm guy, talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Like, because he's a big old fat guy sitting on a thing. Like some of them, they have like chips, you know, scattered everywhere. I always wonder if like the guy's like just like a super nice guy. He was just sitting there like watching his show. He's watching his anime or whatever he was watching and just chilling. And then people just took his picture and now he's the guy. You know what I mean? He's just like, every time he opens, he's like, man, fuck.
Well, Nick, you're a wrestler, right? You wrestle, yeah, for Minnesota, right?
Yeah, I wrestled University of Minnesota.
You,
yeah,
know, the Nigerian boys from Minnesota. You ever talk to him, Pete?
I talked to him online a little bit. You know what I mean? I like, when I first started trying to follow the flow, I tried to talk to them a little. Pete's super nice guy.
Yeah, you know? He is.
Yeah. Super great guy. Super nice guy. You know, and then like I talked to him. I talked to his brother a tiny bit, but mostly I talked to him, and he was super nice. He was always nice. You know, like they sent me a book and stuff like that. So they're super nice guys. I don't really follow what they say. I think the curse, it's actually, they're very smart guys and they're very good traders, but the ponytail pump is a curse, man. Every time I have options and the ponytail pump comes, I just have to sell to the riffraff, you know. I have to get rid of it because I know there's going to be weak money in there. You know, I'm sitting on some Gilead calls and they're like, you should buy Gilead. And I'm just like, fuck. like they just ruined it for me. And so I have to sell it.
Well, that's a good like practice in general, which is if it comes up on CNBC, like usually that's a time to exit when everybody else is trying to get in, because usually there's a dump after that. You'll get a little like if they mention something on CNBC, it doesn't matter what it is, and it doesn't mean that it's not going to go higher eventually, or that the Nigerians are going to be wrong or whatever. But a lot of times too, like you'll see like, oh, we're going to have the CEO of United Technologies on, and they'll have him on, and the stock will rise in anticipation of the guy's appearance. You'll see a lot of times the stock will tick up and up and up. And if the guy's scheduled to come on like at noon, you know, when by like 12:02, I'll be out, you know, because I'm like, all right, this is it. You know, it's buy the rumor, sell the news, essentially.
Yeah,
but
for
with appearances on CNBC, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the Nigerians are notorious for that because they're right a lot of times. You know, I mean, they do. They're smart traders. You know, they didn't get here by being dumb. You know, I mean, right. The guys are both worth a lot of money, and they work really hard, and they both have good philosophies. I think both of them were pro football players. I'm not positive yep. about that. I'm pretty sure they were both pro football players. So they know what they're doing and stuff. But the second you have options with them and they pump it, man, so much weak money gets in there. So at like one tick down, they're running. You know what I mean? They see their whatever their one options contract that they paid up, you know, $150 for. It turns to 148 and they're out. So yeah, you got to be careful with that. You got to be careful with the ponytail pump.
I just want to go back to what you were saying before about like people that think that they can fight and can't. You know, one of the things that stunned me, and I mean, I walked into a gym, and I mean, when I say I knew zero, I mean less than zero, right? Like I knew nothing about fighting. I knew nothing about jiu-jitsu. I knew nothing about striking. Like I just had never done it. Like I'd never even fucking jump rope. Like that was the first thing the guy that owned my gym asked me. He's like, can you jump rope? I'm like, I don't fucking know. I said, you know, I'm a runner, right? So I expected like I would go in there with good cardio and I'd be like, all right, you know, that lasted all of about 30 seconds until I learned like, man, like I'm fucking nowhere near these guys. But one of the things that, you know, I think people, for me, was cool. Like what's really cool now is when I watch a fight now, like I'm sitting at a bar and even if it's, you know, whatever, if it's some regional fight and, you know, or some undercard, whatever, it doesn't even matter who it is. Like it's so cool to be able to watch the grappling and understand what's going on. Whereas, you know, a couple years ago, there was just two guys rolling around and you were like, you know, why isn't anybody doing anything? You know, like you don't even understand what the cardio is like to just stand in a clinch with somebody, right? It's
almost all fans do not understand the grappling part. You know what I mean? You really have to do it to understand it. You know, you really have to go to a fight gym and train for a month or two, for a while to be able to understand how complicated and how hard fighting is. You know what I mean? It really is. It happens all the time with football players, professional football players. They love to train MMA because there's nothing like it. You know what I mean? They like to come in, they like to box, they like to do this stuff. And every one of them is just like, holy crap. Like, thank God I don't do this. You know, thank God I play football. Thank God I do this. And I mean, there's very few things in sports and in the world that are as grinding and require as much physical and mental talent as fighting does. And so I think people really underestimate that. You know what I mean? Because they look at the guys as if like most people look at athletes like they're dumb. And to a degree we are, you know, because we're very focused on what we do. But there was guys that I wrestled with in the University of Minnesota that were so dumb. Like when it came to like they were so stupid when it came, they couldn't write a paper, they couldn't spell, they couldn't do math. But the second you were on the wrestling mat with them, they were like fucking Albert Einstein. It's like they're the way they spoke cleaned up, the verbs they like their ability to talk and to rationalize and to think deeply was crazy to me. It was crazy how stupid these guys could be outside of the room, and when you got them in the room, they just turned into savants. You know what I mean? And so I think in sports, people don't understand that part of it. They don't understand just how complicated a professional sport is. They don't understand how much work is involved in all these things. And they just, you know, they watch football on the weekend and they don't understand even one hundredth of the complexity of the things that are going on. And I think the most when it comes to that is fighting. I think people understand fighting the least.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you. One of the things that my jiu-jitsu professor talks to me about is we talk about the same thing often. I mean, he's a huge football fan also. But we talk about what the endurance and what the talent level is of somebody on the professional level. And then, you know, he said to me like things like, dude, you know, when Antonio Brown, when you can turn on a game and you can watch Antonio Brown running and just pulling away from a fucking safety, right? Another like professional grade, you know, athlete, like pure athlete, one of the best safeties in the world. And you're watching Antonio Brown, you can actually visualize him picking up steps on this dude as he's running away from him. And he just says to me, like, you have no idea, like, how absurdly fast you have to be to pull away from like one of the fastest guys in the world in that position, right? It's just, it's on a completely different level. Every summer, Nick, I go out to San Francisco. There's a fund out there that does a batting practice at the Giants Park as like their summer event. And, you know, you get guys up there that will throw you balls at, you know, 45 miles an hour. And I'm standing in the batter's box like, Jesus, slow the fuck down. Like, you trying to fucking kill me? Like, yeah. And then you turn on a game and you watch Aroldis Chapman throw 102. And you're just like, holy shit. And it's just the discrepancy between amateurs, you know, guys that play rec sports and guys that sit on the couch and commentate versus the guys that get in there and do it. It's insane. It's insane.
It's even shocking to me. I fought a guy and I ended up beating him up pretty bad. And he ended up coming and then that like 6 months later, he ended up having another fight and I sat ringside for it. And I mean, when this guy was like throwing kicks and they were landing, I was like, oh my God, that guy is fucking amazing. And then I was thinking to myself, like, God, I wouldn't want to get kicked by that guy. And then, like, in the back of my head, I was like, holy shit, I did get kicked by that guy. like it's different when you're in there, but when you step back and you're not like fighting yourself and you're not warmed up and you're not ready to go, and you actually see what happens and you actually see what even you're doing. It's the same thing. Like if you're on the sidelines at a football game and like you said, you see one of these guys run. I mean, if we started on like, they would beat me by, you know, by a mile, right? I wouldn't even be halfway done down the field, and they would have ran the whole thing already. So some of the athletes that you see, you know, you really don't have, like you said, you don't have the ability to comprehend just what freaks of nature they are, you know, especially in the top sports when you're talking about soccer or you're talking about football, like those guys are unbelievable. You know, if you're like the top of the world in soccer, you're so good at soccer. You know what I mean? Because everyone in the world plays it. So if you are on a pro and then you're the best on the pro team in soccer, like there's really not a better athlete in the world than you. You know what I mean? Because that's like what the whole world is trying to do. So I think people underestimate that in fighting. I think they underestimate that everywhere. And if you actually kind of, if you have the opportunity and you know you can find someone that's like the best at what they do, you know, whether it's football or basketball or something, and you know I encourage everyone to try to go watch them train or to try to get to know them so you can kind of see the difference.
And it's funny too, like I spend a lot of time on YouTube watching sports highlights from all different sports, specifically for the reasons that we're talking about. So like if you put on a video and you watch like Ronaldinho or Lionel Messi, like in their prime, there's all these videos out there, you know, insane dribbling skills, right? And you're just watching these guys just fucking humiliate defenders. Like ridiculous shit. And then Nick, you think to yourself, like the one thing that people don't think is like, the guys defending them are the best in the world. That's not Lionel Messi out there kicking it around with some fucking scrub. Like, the shit he's doing is awesome, but that guy that's defending against him, like, he's also in the fucking Champions League. You know what I mean? Like, he's also one of the best in the world, which just makes it that much sicker.
Yeah, if you think about it, like the guy that he just made look stupid was the top guy in his town. He was the team captain on his team. He was the best guy in his college. He was the best guy in a semi-pro league. He was the best guy in his country. And then he's still getting murked, you know?
Right.
So yeah, like that's how you got to think about it, you know? Like you said, these guys are not small. Or like, you know, and then, you know, when you start seeing, like, the actual athletes, like, if you actually, like, step next to LeBron James, I mean, you can't imagine, like, just the size and the physicality of these guys. You know what I mean? Like, it's a whole different ball game.
Yeah, it's funny, too, when you see basketball players and they're all standing on the court together. Like, if you're watching the game on TNT, right, and you see, you know, Charles Barkley is standing next to Shaquille O'Neal and they're doing the analysis, whatever. You know, and then like one of the producers walks over or something, or you see him on the court and they got to stand up next to, you know, Mark Zumoff or somebody that's not a basketball player. You're just like, this guy's 6 feet fucking taller than the other guy. And like, you never notice it because you're watching him relative to the other like super tall guys, relative to the other best players in the world, right?
Yeah. Well, or like you see the guys who aren't that big, like your Jordans or yours, you know, like you see like Scottie Pippen or something, you see that guy in real life, he's a monster. You know, those guys are huge and they look tiny compared to the rest of the basketball players, the big ones, you know, whatever, you know, I don't know that much about basketball, but yeah, I mean, the size and the speed and that of some of these athletes is absolutely crazy. It's crazy.
One of the first things that I learned when I started training was that, you know, size is just, you can't even think about it. You know, you can't. Like, I've had, you know, guys that are twice my size that I've had no problem with because they've been, you know, training less than I have or they don't have the cardio. And I've had 15-year-old kids that are, you know, 5'3 and 120 pounds, you know, just tap me 15 times in a row with 15 different things where I can't even get settled in. I can't even sit somewhere on it. Yeah. It's just, you know, the preconceived notions go right out the window, right, with fighting.
Yeah, yeah, definitely your size, your strength. Yo, one of the craziest things I've never been able to understand is I'm not like a good weightlifter. Like if you were to like put like how much I can squat or how much I can bench press, like it's pathetic. Like, but there's plenty of guys that I train with that can bench press double what I can, that can squat triple what I can, and I can just manhandle them when it comes to fighting. You know what I mean? Like they're weak to me. So there's a lot fighting strength and that realistic strength is so much different than a lot of other measures. So I think that's one of the crazy things about fighting that's different than other things is that you run into a lot of guys that like shouldn't be that good, but they are, you know?
How much of that do you think is mental, Nick?
You know, I don't know. I find weightlifting to be rather silly. So maybe that's why. Maybe that's why I'm no good at it, because I've just decided it doesn't matter. But I don't really know why that is. But like, there's just guys that are naturally physically strong. The strongest guy I've ever went with, a guy named Jacob Volkman. He didn't lift a weight ever, and he's inhumanly strong. You know, like, well, how'd you get strong? He's like, oh, well, I worked on a farm and I killed pigs. He's like, oh, okay. Like, that's what he did every day. He went and he fucking killed pigs. He killed pigs and dug up rocks. And so he's the strongest human being I've ever touched in my life, you know? Like, and he's not, like, if you looked at him, you'd be like, that guy sucks. like, there's no way that guy's an athlete. And he's pound for pound the strongest human being alive.
Yeah, looks can be incredibly deceptive, man. You know, hey, remember Rocky used to chase around chickens or whatever he did in Rocky 1, right? Like, whatever you got to do to get your fucking heartbeat going, you know,
chasing. And then he got his ass kicked in the title fight.
yeah. It's funny, too. I was watching Last Chance U, the Netflix series. You know, one of the kids goes back to Nebraska or wherever he's from, you know, just from a fucking trailer out in the middle of nowhere, and they show him training. He's a center or something, you know, so he's a big boy. If you saw him, you'd be like, that's not an athlete, right? Because he's just a big dude. But he goes back, and the dude, he's just like, he's got nothing to train with. He's just hitting a piece of concrete, like, with a hammer, with a sledgehammer or something. And I was just, like, standing in a field with nothing in it, you know? And, like, I'm sitting at home looking at, like, a $79 medicine ball that I have. Like, man, the fuck's going on? Like, how come I'm not ripped yet?
Yeah. Especially in wrestling, there's a lot of Russians that are like that. You will see these guys, and they, like you don't understand like the life that they came from, you know. It's like 20 below zero and they're outside and, you know, throwing rocks around,
right?
You know, you barely have enough money to eat, you know. They're eating like a few frozen vegetables that, you know, lasted through the winter, and they have no, like, and they're that hungry, and like they're just that strong, and they're that good. So that's one of the things that's hard about fighting, especially if you in the States, you have an easy life. And so there's so many hungry people around the world in professional sports. You have, if you, you that have to deal with so much more than we have to. So you have to be on top of your game, and you have to make sure that, you know, you're putting in the training just as hard as they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So are you training now, man, with the coronavirus and everything going on? Like, are you, what's going on? I mean, do you have a fight coming up? Are you actively training? What's up?
Well, actually, I got poked in the eye in my last fight. And so I got like a pretty severe eye injury. And so my vision is actually still messed up. So unfortunately I haven't been able to do too much, but I've just been running all the time. So every day I run, I work out twice a day still. I wake up at about 6:30 in the morning. I run about 5 miles. I time it, you know, I run like a mile. Then I go and I try to do the 5K. And then after I'm done with the 5K, I come back. I get my coffee. I look and see what's happening in the market. The market starts at like 9:30. I go from like 9:30 to like 10:30, try to make some trades. Then after that, in the afternoon, I try to work out again. As long as there's nothing crazy happening, because it's kind of a good time to take a break from the stock market, as long as you have good trades set up and stuff, you know. And then I train again. And then right when I take care of my kids as well. So I have two daughters. I have a 3-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. So they stay home with me. So I take care of them as well. And my wife comes home, we switch, and then I go and I work out again. I either ride my bike or I run again. And then that's what I've been doing. And because of my eye injury, I've decided, you know, I'm going to try to run like a 5K for time, because I need something to focus on, right, something to do. And so that's kind of what I'm doing now. I'm just trying to get my cardio in shape. I'm getting my, you know, I'm going to start lifting more weights and stuff, but like, I can't see all that well. I'm starting to be able to see well again, but I couldn't drive or anything. So I've been stuck at home. So I was kind of in quarantine before quarantine was a thing.
You're getting comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's interesting too, talking about the injury. I have really bad turf toe and I love to run.
That shit hurts, man.
Dude, it's way worse than people think.
I used to be like such a turf toe hater. I think like was it Deion Sanders or someone got it and like missed a game or something. Yep. And I was like, what a pussy. Like I was like, what the fuck is he talking about? A fucking turf toe. And then God like punished me and gave it to me. Oh my God. I got that in plantar fasciitis and it crippled me. Like I couldn't believe how bad it was. I could not believe it.
It sounds so much nicer than it is, man. You're just like turf toe. Like, all right. Like, dude, it fucking kills. Like, it keeps me up at night, dude. Like, it's like when I first got it, my foot turned into the size of a football, and I was trying to take like ibuprofen and shit just to get the inflammation down. I'm icing it like 18 hours a day almost and trying to keep it elevated and all that shit. And it was just like, I couldn't sleep, man. There were nights I stayed up throughout the whole night. It's way worse than people think. But
yeah.
It's
awful.
Adapting the workout is the toughest thing, like what you're doing, man, right? Like you're out of your routine because of your eye injury, right?
Yeah. I'm super out of my routine. It's also stressful to when you're injured because, you know, like you're worried you can't take care of yourself. You know what I mean? I mean, I take care of myself fighting.
Right.
And also the weird, I've never had an injury like this, but with the eye injury, I actually had, so I got poked in the, actually I fought the whole fight, seeing double, triple at the end. So it was pretty crazy. And then when I got home, my vision was messed up. So I couldn't see my computer screens. I couldn't see anything. And so for like a month, I was complete. So picture you have like glasses on that make you see triple of everything. So it was scary. And it's the first time in my life that physical violence sort of scared me a little bit. It's like my body was in like this mode of like scared being. And so like if I opened Twitter and I saw like a fight clip, I would almost like back away from it, because like my body's like, you can't fight right now, you can't see. And so that was a weird feeling, and then thankfully it went away pretty quick. But that's the first time in my life where like physical violence actually scared me. And so that was a weird feeling.
So you mentioned, I want to ask you about your daily trading routine, trading, not training, but you mentioned that, you know, once you get your shit set up in the morning at 9:30, you know, you take that lull, which I think a lot of traders do. They get up, they get their shit set up from like 9:30 to 10:30 or 9:30 to 11, and everybody goes and, you know, on Wall Street, they go out and they get their T-bone steak and their two martinis at lunch. I've seen it. And, yeah. You know, at home, people might go out, you know, they might go do their workout like you, and or might go get lunch, whatever. You find that sometimes taking the break, like if you got your positions where you want them, like actually sometimes is beneficial, because maybe you would have taken something off, you know, right away that you shouldn't have, or and just letting the market work a little bit and kind of disconnecting yourself from it. Or when you're on those breaks, are you constantly checking your phone and shit like that?
Well, I mean, obviously it depends on the day. If it's a very chaotic day, I don't take the break, and I make sure I sit here and watch every damn tick, you know, and I'm on top of it. But in general, I think that it's good as long as you are confident in your ideas and, you know, you set a few stops and stuff, it's good to walk away, especially when it starts going against you. 'Cause then like you're sitting there like worried and you're going to make a bad decision. Even, you know, and usually the kind of thin liquidity times in that little afternoon phase, it's sleepy anyways. You just sit here and you watch nothing.
Right.
So you might as well get up and do something. And usually what happens is if I sit here, I make bad decisions. If I get up and leave for 30 minutes and I come back, my account is usually up.
Right.
because I made good decisions and I'm not just sitting there overthinking it. So yeah, you definitely, the ability to take a break, which is something I've never been good at. I'm a workaholic, so I like working is what I like to do. So the ability to trade and the ability to walk away or the ability to do nothing is one of the most important things, and it's one of the hardest to actually get good at.
It is really important, and I agree with you. You know, there's so many times where, like you said, as long as you're not in a position where you can get run over, you know what I mean? If you sold puts and you're unhedged or something, you know, and you got stops in, you know, it's sometimes way beneficial to just get up, stop. Like, to look at every tick is just brutal. And, you know, I used to think years ago that that's what trading was you literally sat there and watched every tick. And that just drives you fucking insane. It drives you crazy very quickly. So, yeah.
And if you're not comfortable enough to, like, go get a coffee real quick, then you're probably over, you know, you've got too much on the line.
100%,
right?
Yep.
Because if you were in a good position, you wouldn't care. You wouldn't worry about it. Now, that doesn't always work. I mean, one time, like I think I had like a trade on and I was like, oh, it's gonna pop here. I knew the market was gonna pop, and so I bought some call options very short dated that day. And then right as it started to turn, it popped. I made like $5,000 and I went downstairs and got an espresso and I came back upstairs and I was like $5,000 in the hole. So it can happen.
Right.
You can be like, I was like, oh, I have time. I even ran. I ran downstairs. I pressed the button. It made me an espresso. I came back upstairs and it like, wait, it had all evaporated because some fucking headline came out or something, you know? Or you know, I mean, a lot of traders lose money going to the bathroom. But in general, you know, if you can't get up and walk away for 5 seconds, then you're over. I don't want to say over leveraged, but you're definitely playing around with size that you shouldn't be in.
Exactly.
You should size down.
I think you just made a fucking great point, man. I think you just made a great point. And I got to tell you, there were days. You know, now it's probably tough for people to remember with what's going on, but 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I mean, I remember texting, I don't know if you follow Open Outcrier on Twitter, but that's my buddy Ryan Sellers. I remember texting him day after day, just like, when is this market going to do anything? There was something like, you know, there were just weeks and weeks and weeks at a time, Nick, where the Dow... Okay, even at 23,000, 25,000 was staying in like a 50-point range all day. Yeah. Like you come back to the computer 6 hours later and the market would be exactly where it was 6 hours ago. And things are a little different now.
Now it's different, but they were doing the same thing. Like they were like the, you know, the VIX is at like 12 and they're buying puts on it constantly, you know, VXX puts, you know, UVX, UXVY or whatever it is, you know, puts constantly. It's like, is it really going to go any lower? and they just melt that VIX away, you know, and that's kind of how when you got the market makers and you got like how the market works now with, you know, that with the hedging and, you know, like how much people are involved in the algorithmic stuff and the gamma and all that kind of stuff, you know, they it just dampens volatility so much.
Yeah.
So you just live in low volatility ranges and then you live in extremely crazy volatility ranges. And that's just sort of the market that we're in right now. You know, eventually that will change, but that seems to be the name of the game right now. Just severely dampened volatility and just outrageous volatility.
When you trade, are you trading like mostly macro instruments like the SPY, the VXX, shit like that? Or do you like dabble in individual sectors?
I'm an individual name guy. So I'm looking for just names that are going to pop or are going to crash. So I'm just constantly looking for what the big money is spending on. And I'm looking to get in the individual names. Now, when there's a market crash, individual names are kind of worthless because the whole thing is going down or up.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so if we have a ripping day and you don't want to really pick individual names because the whole market is going to go up, so there's going to be no alpha there, and there's a chance that single company could have something bad come out and you get nothing. So then you should just ride the market. Or if it's like a crazy crash, then, you know, like what's the difference, you know? You can just throw a dart at a board and pick one. You might as well just pick the SPY because it's more liquid, and if you need to get out, you can. So, and I only trade options pretty much, you know, I mean, I do some equity hedging and stuff if I need to, but in general, I'm only doing the options. So I usually like to play individual names. I like to swing big. I'm a big time swing trader. I'm not really a day trader. I'm trying to line up big fucking home runs. And then that's what I do. But when it comes to times like this, then yeah, I'm just playing the SPY, you know, I'm like, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but like I made a lot of money shorting gold, and then I made a lot of money shorting the market, and I made a decent amount of money, you know, shorting the Tesla and the space and stuff like that.
Yeah, the bubble names.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, I guess when you go through your end of day routine, what does that look like? I mean, so you talk about 10:30, you talk about taking a little break. What does your end of day routine look like?
Well, I right up, obviously the market closes at 4. I wait for the options to close on the SPY at about like 4:15.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So to make sure I don't end up getting caught in something stupid like that. And then I usually my kids are sleeping at that time. And so like I take a little break, I get cleaned up, I get ready, I get dressed to go for my next workout. And then when my wife gets home, I go and I leave and I work out. And so then I work out, I come back home, I eat dinner, I do what I got to do. I play, I hang out with my kids when my kids go to bed. I open up the market and I try to start looking at where the futures and where China opens. And then from like that to like 10:30, that's what I do. And then I, you know, kind of get ready for the next day.
That's it. Yeah. And then that's a wrap. You get ready to get up the next morning. I saw that you tweeted out that bottle of Macallan 12, but you say you're not much of a drinker. What's in the Lentz family liquor cabinet right now? I got to ask before the end of the podcast, of course.
I'm a whiskey guy. That's what I do. I don't want to get into this, but the reason that I'm not a big drinker is because I grew up with a very abusive alcoholic stepfather. Okay. So drinking during the week and stuff is just something that I am distasteful of.
Sure.
It just like, it brings back those memories and stuff. So I do not, I'm not. So on the weekends and stuff, oh yeah, I'll drink, I'll party with the best of them. But during the weekend stuff, I day drinking and just like the idea of having alcohol around my kids and stuff makes me severely uncomfortable. So, my favorite whiskey is Yamasaki. I like Macallan as well. And, you know, just straight neat. That's all I do. I'm just a whiskey drinker.
Just out of the bottle into a glass and that's it.
Yep. That's it.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. I guess my last question is, are you going to come to Vegas this year in October, man, when we all get together for Traders for Cause? Are you going to come hang with me and Lucci and by the pool?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to. Why not? Yeah.
Lucci already said he's picking up the bill. Don't worry about it.
Okay, yeah. Well, he has a lot more money than I do, so he can handle it.
Me too. Yeah, we'll sit there and we'll mooch off him, man. Talk about how we always buy expensive things when there's people around.
Well, I don't buy expensive things for anybody, so you can have that one.
All right, yo, Nick Lentz, thank you so much, brother, man. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast and sharing all this stuff. And if you don't follow Nick Lentz, what's your Twitter handle again? Is it just Nick Lentz?
It's Nick Lentz at NIKLENTZ.
Yeah, so if you're in the trading world, follow Nick Lentz. And I think also probably not my business to do so, but on behalf of people that have enjoyed fighting and enjoyed training and enjoyed watching it and enjoyed MMA and enjoyed jiu-jitsu, thanks for being there at a very, very crucial time, I think, in the sport and helping it evolve. Because I think you'll go down as a legend, and you know you're well respected by your peers. And so, just on behalf of people, thank you very much for your contribution to the sport.
All right, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
All right,
thank
Nick, you. Let's talk to you soon, brother. That was the one, the only. Yo, it's crazy. I didn't even know Nick Lentz was a trader, and I didn't even know who he was. But a couple months ago, when he started following me on Twitter, and we started posting all this shit that actually like made sense, I was like, oh my god. When I found out he was a fighter, I was like, Jesus, that's crazy. Because, you know, like he said, you expect people that are proficient in one thing to maybe not be as proficient in the other. But he's a great follow on Twitter, whether you're a trader or whether you're into the fight games. So check out my brother, Nick Lentz. I got a great and, I mean, really got a good schedule coming up for the podcast. I know I say it at the end of every podcast. Even sometimes I've said it when I don't have a good schedule, just to talk some shit, but this time I actually do. So get ready for that, and we'll see you again soon. Right now I got shit to do, so I'm out. Peace!